Dearest Ira, it was such a joy to speak to you this morning over the telephone while you were in New York. And Mom was certainly glad to hear that your cold was getting better. Anyway, Ira, today is Thursday, November 27th. That is Thanksgiving Day. And as per of today, our friend Frank Rehag has not had a drink for 10 days. Can you imagine that, man? Anyway, I don't know at this moment when nor where I'm going to mail you this tape, but I decided to record the Frank Rehag saga while the details are still fresh in my mind. After our phone conversation Friday, November the 14th, next morning, that is Saturday, very early, I went to Synanon and spoke to Mike Lomach, who's in charge of interviews and admissions. I had already realized at that time that we did not follow the correct procedure, since the only way to get someone into Synanon is to have him personally call for an interview. I admitted to Mike that we had made a grave mistake by taking the whole matter in our own hands. He was, however, quite gracious and accepted to interview Frank, but stated that this could not be done before Monday. So here, Sunday morning, I'm at the airport waiting for flight 101 of United Airlines. The plane came in about 2 hours late, and it did not take long to spot Mr. Frank Rehag, in spite of the fact that I had never met him before. For reasons unknown, I had depicted him in my fantasy as tall, handsome, with some kind of an intellectual, sad face. Then suddenly, I see a guy who looks like the antithesis of what I had imagined. That is a typical Skid Row bum. And it did not take long for me to pick up that this was our friend, Mr. Frank Rehag. I mustered a little courage, walked up to him, and said, "Hello, Frank." He gave me a suspicious look, thinking that I could be a cop, and answered, "Who are you?" I answered that I was your father, and immediately he became very debonair and pleasant. After a few short preliminaries and kissing the hands of ladies passing by, he excused himself for a second to dash to the bar, where he got down with great speed about 4 or 5 vodka and tonic, doubles of course, just to restore his shaky nerves. In the meantime, Frankie Chavez, who incidentally seems to be a beautiful cat, explained that Rehag had given him plenty of trouble during the flight, including an unsuccessful escape attempt at the Denver airport. At this time, I'm starting to have quite a bit of difficulty to yank Mr. Rehag out of the bar. Furthermore, after the drinks, he has developed a great deal of walking trouble, and I have no other alternative than almost to carry him. The walk through the tunnel to the baggage area will remain in my memory as the longest walk I have ever had, pal. It seemed like 1,000 miles. In the meantime, everyone is staring at us, but Frank, in spite of his rubbery legs and clouded mind, is still insisting in kissing the hands of all good-looking dames passing by. What a scene. Anyway, everything has an end, and we finally make it to the baggage area. Of course, it will be superfluous to mention that Frank has lost his baggage tickets, and here we have another hassle on our hands. But this is also finally resolved. So here we are at the loading zone for cabs and other passengers. I tell Frank to wait for me while I pick the car out up at the parking lot. I drive out of the parking lot and return to the loading zone. I notice a small crowd gathered looking at something. The something the crowd looks at is a guy happily sleeping on the sidewalk. And who is it? You have guessed right, Ira. It's Frank. I have to drag him into the car. Some people are laughing. Some others are staring. A cop gives me a funny look. I wasn't feeling too much at ease. Anyway, I'm victorious in the end. That is, he's sitting in the car and we are driving away. Before Frank's arrival, I had planned to have him sleep over at the house for the night before the interview. But now I'm realizing that this is impossible considering the state he's in. So I decided that I will put him up in some motel close to Sinanan. In the meantime, I'm trying to make conversation with him and to convey the idea how Sinan is going to save his life, etc. But Frank has other ideas. He is only interested in going to some bars or to stop at a drugstore to get some cough syrup. Luckily, he finally falls asleep while I keep driving towards Santa Monica. I continue to think and realize that the way he's dressed, unshaven, filthy, and loaded to boot, I cannot take him to a first-rate place where they would not let him in. So finally, I spot a second-rate motel, the Kensington Motel on Ocean Drive, one block away from Sinanan, where the manager seems to be receptive to give us a room for $12. He knows the scene, this manager, since the room is not even worth $3 a night. Now Frank refused to leave the car. He claims that he does not want to be bothered and even becomes hostile and aggressive. I decide I have no other alternative than to let him sleep for another couple of hours. This does it. After 3 or 4 hours, he finally agrees to get out of the car and to move into the room. As soon as I get him in the room, he changes his mind and wants me to drive him to a drugstore to get some cough syrup again. Of course, I refuse. He gets disgusted with me and starts an argument, which I have to conclude by walking out on him, promising that I would keep in touch and call him later. At this point, I'm starting to get really fed up with him. I report the whole scene to Dan Marsh and other friends at Sinanan, and they all advise I should leave the guy alone and have him come to Sinanan by himself on his own volition. I wind up buying their suggestion. Furthermore, at this point, I'm starting to get a little frightened because I feel that Frank is so uptight that he can wind up beating me up. However, I call him at the motel in the evening, and of course, I'm advised that he went out for a stroll. Naturally, where could he have gone but to the closest bar, I imagine. Monday morning, however, I decide that I cannot let him down. After all your efforts and his flying in from so far, etc. After several attempts, I get him on the phone. He's getting rank now, does not want to hear anything of Sinanan anymore, and is only interested in getting some Bloody Marys. I tell him that I will be over in an hour anyway, but I am worried and a little afraid. I start to think that perhaps I need some help to swing the deal. I call Bob Yeager for some advice. Bob says he does not know Frank, but suggests I should try to call some trombone players in town who may know him and may be able to help him, me. So I call Frank Rosolino first, but he's not in. Next, I try Bob Brookmeyer, who claims he has not seen Rehack in years. Then I try the trumpet player Jimmy Zito. Zito is pretty sympathetic to the story, and while he does not know Frank, he suggests I should try Jimmy Cleveland. I call Jimmy Cleveland, and he turns out to be a friend of Frank. I explain the story and the help I need, and Jimmy is willing and eager, providing it would not take too much of his time, because he has a gig at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So here I dash out in the car, meet Cleveland, and also Melba Liston, who happens to be at his apartment. We leave Melba at Cleveland's apartment, where she has to write some music. And the two of us take off in my car to Santa Monica. We find Frank sound asleep. At the onset, he does not even recognize Cleveland. But after a few minutes, they start to embrace and kiss. And Jimmy, who is a beautiful man and an intelligent and warm human being, manages to sway Frank. We get him in the car, and away we go to Sinan. Frank offers to turn all his money over to me, but I suggest that I cannot take it, and that he should give it to Sinan. He agrees. The walk into the house is pretty embarrassing. He's drunk. I put him on the prospect bench. He wants to run after the dames again. There's a short hassle. One of the residents tells him rather harshly to cool it and to remain seated. Frank, who thinks that Sin is kind of an elegant rest home with good-looking broads, looks at me as if I double-crossed him and got him into some kind of a trap. I nod to Cleveland that he will be late for his gig, and we both dash out of the door. I drop Cleveland off at his place and return to the office. Around 4 p.m., my curiosity prompts me to call Sinanan, and I am told that after sitting for about 30 minutes on the bench and behaving in a quite rank manner, Frank obtained the permission to walk out for a breath of fresh air for 5 minutes, and that he took advantage of this interlude to split, and that they have not seen him since. Now I'm tearing my hair out for not having taken his money, which I could have turned over myself to Sinanan. Of course, on account of this mistake of mine, Frank decided that Sinanan is for the birds and scooped off for the closest bar again. Quite a letdown. After work and pretty beat, I drove down to the house, and hallelujah, I was told that he came back and that they had sent him down to the sauna to clean and sober up. From now on, it's going up to him, Ira. Nor you nor I can do anything additional. I hope that he will not split, but if he does, and should by any chance contact you, you will have to hold a Sinanan position. And that is, you cannot give him any help of any kind. Not even a kind word, Ira. Keep this in mind. It is of uttermost importance. I sometimes fail to understand why ex-drug addicts call themselves dope fiends. After meeting Frank, I know why. While they may be the most beautiful people on earth while they're clean, watch out when they're loaded. They turn into animals. So don't forget, Ira, if he ever splits and he calls you, one word of kindness from you may mean his death. As painful as it may sound, just tell him to go and fuck himself for letting you down. You may resave a life. By the way, thanks to this incident, I met Jimmy Cleveland, who, as I said, is a beautiful human being. I intend to become friends with him. So thank you, Ira, for concocting the Rehack Saga, which gave me a chance to make a new friend in the person of Jimmy Cleveland. All right.
Now, the next sequence here is my daughter Noi playing the guitar. She hates me to record it, and she doesn't know that I'm doing it, so I'm going to do it behind her back. This is July 11, 1970. She's a pretty good guitar player, that kid. Listen.
Thank you. when you first started it, woman, I can't believe it. You've improved the store, I can't even imagine.
Well, exactly.
I know, but not for that amount of time.
Yes, I have exactly quite a bit.
No, what I mean to say is that any, no matter how much you've been practicing, I just heard it a few weeks ago.
I really can't,
because it seems to me you've gotten the real...
Well,